But I think more important to agriculture is the idea of efficiency. If you can have a more efficient conversion of feed to milk, or feed to meat, or feed to eggs, the feed efficiency is, I think, one of the holy grails, if you will, in terms of sustainability. The feed efficiency, which is impacted by your operation, but also the ingredients that are available, and but also, you know, the housing that you use in terms of the energy, the lighting or lack of lighting, you know, the operation itself, not just the feed, but all of that impacts this idea of sustainability, because it's all about efficiency. Efficiency of converting the protein and the energy into an animal product.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Boost digestive health, performance, and profitability with Digesterone Prime, a feed additive that enhances digestion and immune function in dairy calves. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/prime. Exalit, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Adiseo USA, producers of Smartamine M and MilkPay.com. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together. Agrarian Solutions, research-backed microbial solutions for healthier, higher-performing livestock. AgriComfort, the cow comfort specialist, because her longevity is your legacy.
Good day, and welcome to the Dairy Podcast Show. This is Mark Thomas, and today we have the great pleasure of having Dr. Kurt Rosentrater from Iowa State with us. Good morning, Kurt.
Hey, hello, Mark, and hello, everyone. I appreciate the opportunity to join you today and share some random thoughts as they relate to dairy science, but also to agriculture and food systems in general.
Excellent. So Kurt is professor of sustainable food and agriculture, and I think that title will really sum up well today what we plan to talk about. As usual, I had some time to chat with Kurt just before connecting here, and I think there's lots of different directions we can go. But Kurt, why don't you start by giving us a little bit of a background of, you know, what you do, who you are, and how you found yourself doing what you do today at Iowa State.
Thank you very much, Mark. That's a really great introductory question. And you said we do have some time, so I can meander and talk for a while. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes. We're not the black belt 7-minute podcast, so you have a little time to expand on your thoughts.
All right. Well, that's great. So probably like many of the listeners to the podcast, I grew up on a farm. And so originally I'm from Northwest Iowa, and I grew up on a traditional corn and soybean farm, something you'd see in lots of places in the Midwest of the U.S. And so we had about 1,000 acres of corn and soybeans. We had our own swine herd. We did farrow to finish, and we had our own beef herd. And you know, we grew our beef and sold our beef and butchered our beef. And so my introduction to agriculture really was as a kid doing chores, working outside. Of course, you know, grumbling that I had to clean out the hog house or clean out the barn or whatever. But, you know, the exciting part for me was the harvest season. I always was really excited by, you know, riding in the combine, or when I got older, driving the combine, driving the equipment and the tractors. And so my plan was to be a farmer, and I never meant my, at least as a kid, I never planned to leave. And it was during high school, when I was in FFA and Future Farmers of America, where I started to learn about, hey, you know, I like science. I like technology, and maybe I should go to Iowa State University like a lot of my other friends were doing and learn about something science related. And so I went to Iowa State, majored in biochemistry because it was and still is an emerging topic for a lot of aspects of agriculture. But, you know, eventually I found my way to agricultural engineering because for whatever reason, I wasn't convinced that biochemistry was my path. Now, in retrospect, you know, would I have ended up in the same path, in the same place, had I stayed on that path? Probably, because I, like you, use a lot of biochemistry fundamentals in the work that I do. And so I found my way back to that, but I had to meander a while. So I majored in agricultural engineering and decided, you know, I really like what I was learning and decided to stay for a master's degree where I worked in swine housing systems and dust removal and odor removal from swine housing systems. And somehow I decided I was going to stay for a PhD because apparently I liked learning about all of this stuff and the applications. And so I kind of transitioned into more of the grain processing work as part of my PhD program. And it was interesting because it wasn't just about processing corn products or soy products. Back in the day, it was also processing rendering byproducts and blood byproducts. And this was around the time of when mad cow disease was becoming a hot topic here in the U.S. And like, oh, we're still using the whole blood products, but then that sort of had a very short shelf life. But I remember, you know, standing in the Iowa State meat lab when we were slaughtering pigs and cows and collecting blood with 5-gallon buckets and then taking them across campus to do processing. And so after I finished, my PhD committee said, congratulations, you're welcome to the club of PhDs. Good luck, have a nice life. And, you know, it was kind of an interesting moment because, like, okay, I guess I really have to find something to do besides work at a university and be a student. And so I went to work for an engineering construction company where I was able to design processing systems for feed mills and flour mills and pet food processing plants and grain elevators and biodiesel plants and, you know, sort of the application of what I had been learning. But it was you learn a lot in the real world that you don't learn in school, which I think has been really helpful. It's been really helpful because, yeah, you think something matters and in the real world it doesn't necessarily. Decided I would try, you know, after working for the engineering company for a while, decided I would try my hand at teaching because I really didn't have a lot of teaching experience. So moved to the Chicagoland area, taught at Northern Illinois in their manufacturing and engineering program. And it was really funny because it was mostly removed from agriculture. And I remember talking to some of my mentors, and one of which had gone to work for the USDA Agricultural Research Service in Pennsylvania. And, you know, we were talking about manufacturing and food systems and agriculture systems, and I had never heard of ARS before, and I had no idea what ARS was, but apparently he really liked working there, and it was 100% research. And so apparently they had an opening in the Philadelphia Research Center, and it was a little too far away from family, but there was an opening in Brookings, South Dakota with ARS research station there. And that was really close to where I grew up. And so we moved to Brookings, and I spent quite a few years as a research scientist for ARS working on value-added uses for ethanol co-products. In fact, it was the center of co-product research for ARS for many years. And it was in that role where I got to pull a lot of things together and, you know, how do you use DDG and wet cake and some of the new products coming out of the ethanol industry and by default, the whiskey industry for beef, for dairy, for swine, for poultry, for aquaculture. And so that's really where I got to come full circle back to the biochemistry because, yeah, manufacturing is one thing, but, you know, how's it, how are these things actually going to perform in a rumen or, you know, we talk about the monogastrics, you know, it's easy to feed tilapia anything, but it's not so easy to feed a rainbow trout anything. It takes different ingredients, different processing, different applications. And so I've been at Iowa State for several years now, and I kind of teach all of these things. And you can't get away from biochemistry. It is the recipe for life, especially when we're talking about agricultural systems.
Feed formulation software is stuck in the past. Most tools haven't evolved beyond basic least cost optimization. A Diet Forge changes that. It's an AI-powered platform with nonlinear ingredient modeling for enzymes and additives, cost per gain and maximum profit optimization, and real-time collaboration like Google Docs for nutrition. Every recommendation is grounded in world-class research, built for modern nutritionists who need more than legacy desktop software can deliver. Work seamlessly with your team and optimize the way modern operations demand. Try dietforge.ai free today. Feed formulation, finally modernized.
So, Kurt, really interesting. You know, I've often heard, you know, go back to the farm. I guess that was a bit of my thoughts also. And then you get open to all these potential opportunities of further education and research and so forth. So, you know, interesting path there. Certainly that opportunity and experience has helped you on your path with that knowledge, but things have changed a lot, right? Since you were a young boy on the farm, et cetera, you know, sustainability, use of resources, different byproducts, et cetera. You know, as you've seen the industries, and I'll say industries, right? Because there's multiple industries in there too, as you get into the petroleum and byproducts, et cetera. You know, what are some of the common things that have allowed sustainability, not only from environmental, but farm sustainability, the efficiency of crop production, the efficiency of grain usage? Again, we can go down lots of paths here, but what has led to greater efficiency in the industry as a whole, not only for the farmer, but for the processors, et cetera?
And we only have 30 minutes, don't we? So that's
Yeah. You're thinking of a semester long course in sustainable grain production. And
exactly. I think, you know, what I have witnessed in lots of different industries, whether it's the meat processing industry and the rendered products that they produce, or the grain processing industry, and for example, lots of the new high protein products coming out of the ethanol industry, I would say I've seen this time and again where there's an existing company or a startup that has the next big thing. And most of the time, the next big thing doesn't pan out for a variety of reasons. Sometimes it does, but a lot of times it does not. Just because a company says, this is going to revolutionize agriculture, generally it's more complicated than that. Because let's take, for example, the new protein products that are coming out of the U.S. ethanol industry. It's great that you can separate proteins, corn proteins primarily, with some new processes, but corn is lysine deficient for a lot of diets. DDG historically has been lysine deficient, and these new co-products are also lysine deficient. So there's no magic bullet. In what you're doing is trading one set of potential challenges for another set.
Yes.
And it's just kind of shifting things around a little bit. And I think I've seen this in a lot of instances for a lot of different types of processors. You know, you think about the pulse proteins several years ago, the partitioning that was happening, and the cardiomyopathy that occurred in dogs, for example. And it's just because you have a more concentrated protein stream doesn't mean it's a more complete protein. And so, you know, I've seen these kinds of things. And when you're talking about efficiency of production at a factory or on a farm, I think what we have to keep in mind is you move one thing on purpose and other things that you don't intend will change also. So there's no silver bullet oftentimes. That being said, I have in recent years, you know, thinking about all of the challenges that we have in agriculture, depending on where you are, you know, climate is a big challenge. And last year, for example, in Iowa, we had way too much rainfall in the mid to late summer. The year before, we didn't have nearly enough. And so we have these extremes in terms of weather that we're trying to deal with on farms, and also in terms of heat. And when we're talking about livestock production, you know, what does that mean for our facilities and the ability to heat animals or cool animals? But I think there's been a lot of talk in recent years about how do we improve water quality in Iowa, for example, without removing the tools that we currently are using in terms of fertilizers and herbicides, pesticides, other chemicals that we add to our fields. So how do we maintain production without losing our tools, but yet improve water quality or improve the genetic traits of our crops? And it's a mixture of lots of different tools, I think, that we have to think about. And so I'm a bit skeptical when a company says, we've got the next best thing.
The next big thing, yes, yes.
The next big thing. Because I always step back and say, well, wait a minute, what does that mean to all of the other pieces of the puzzle? So, because there are so many things to think about. You know, cover crops and regenerative ag, or whatever you want to call the approach to reducing inputs on farm fields. You know, in a few years, we may call it something different than regenerative agriculture. But, you know, it's great that we have cover crops, but if you have to kill those cover crops with glyphosate in order to plant the actual cash crop, you know, what is that unintended consequence in terms of additional herbicide applications? So, I mean, these are questions that I ask. And when I think about, you know, my own family farm, we use all of these tools, and we can't have the conversation about sustainability purely looking at the environmental aspect. We also have to think about what does that mean for the individual producer, the individual farmer. And I want to keep the farm in my family for the next generation, as most people do. And so what does that mean economically? What choices can we make within our current system? And so we've got to think about that aspect of the social sustainability and economic sustainability in addition to the environmental sustainability. And I think we've got a lot of opportunities in front of us right now. You know, something that I think about in terms of animal production, and this is true for pet food, true for aquaculture, true for dairy. What I am seeing, especially in the sustainability area, is that, you know, traditionally we think about least cost formulation software and how that's revolutionized a lot of how the beef producers, the dairy, the swine, the poultry producers operate in terms of the ingredients they use. What I am also seeing is the development and the push for, you know, having carbon scoring or water scoring, some environmental parameters that are incorporated into the formulation software. I haven't seen social aspects implemented yet, and maybe I just haven't seen those, but the bigger picture of sustainability, it's more than just CO2 emissions. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for us in the dairy industry in particular, but in agriculture in general, to wrap together lots of different key indicators for for what we're doing, whether we're producing corn or wheat or sorghum or dairy cows or whatever it is we're producing, I think we've got the opportunity right now to pull a lot of information together to make choices. And I told myself this morning I wasn't going to talk about AI today, but, you know, I've been somewhat resistant to play around with AI for the last couple of years. But, you know, this year I've been kind of, you know, poking around and seeing what actually can this do besides help me write an email. You know, beyond that, how could you use the information at our fingertips to pull together tools that don't exist yet? And so that's sort of an area that I've been experimenting with. Can you wrap together ingredients with not just their composition and their cost, but environmental parameters as well? And I know there are companies who are working on this and marketing these types of things too. So yeah, sustainability is a big story. And you know, you can't just have one lens. You've got to think about the big picture. And you know, you think about consumers, whether it's an owner of a dog or cat and purchasing pet food, or someone who's purchasing groceries for their family, for human consumption. I think a lot of consumers don't care about where their food comes from. They assume that it's safe to eat. They don't give it a lot of thought. But I think there's that segment of consumers who really are starting to care about, well, what is the impact of what I eat? And what is the impact of what I feed my cats and dogs? And what can I do? Now, you know, of course, that varies by region. It varies by country. It varies by your ability to make choices economically. But I am seeing this happen. And I think there's opportunity for all of us working in agriculture to say, how can we use the tools that we have, or how can we build new tools to help us be profitable, maintain our business, be more efficient with our business, and also help consumers understand what it is we do and why we do it.
Every dairy producer knows longevity doesn't happen by accident. AgriComfort, the cow comfort specialists, design rubber flooring and stall products that help support mobility and keep cows productive longer. It's about creating an environment where cows can perform year after year, because when she stays healthy and productive longer, that becomes part of your story. AgriComfort, because her longevity is your legacy. Visit agri-comfort.com to learn more. Adesayo, a global leader in nutritional solutions and the provider of Smartamine M, the best-in-class rumen-protected methionine product for dairy producers who want to optimize milk production, capture more value from their components, and maintain the lifetime performance of their herds. For more product information and to calculate your return on investment when you balance your feed with amino acids, go to milkpay.com.
No, that's excellent, Kurt. And I, you know, as you're talking here, I'm thinking of, like you said, those technologies that alpha amylase corn hybrids, right? And how they fit into, and you know, in my world, dairy production and dairy nutrition, etc. That new things come along, but they do have to fit into the whole system, and that's really where the research comes into play, right? To have the information, the data, and how can we use these products? Because it's easy for a salesperson to go out there and talk something up, but then, you know, how does it really fit into the overall program? I like your link to you mentioned before we connected, and then again that you work in the pet food industry also. You know, very interesting. Most listeners know I live in Mexico, and in the grocery stores there are high-end fresh pet foods that you can buy in the refrigerator section, right? And you think about the dichotomy of with even in the U.S. Folks that are concerned if they could buy high-quality protein, buy beef to make a hamburger. Are they looking for cheaper alternatives to animal protein, unfortunately, in some cases, but then a group of folks that are then looking for these products for their pets that maybe some humans don't have access to, right? So it really opens up a whole geopolitical sustainability discussion Yeah, the lots of opportunities, but lots of challenges also, correct?
And, you know, it's something that strikes me, you know, it's been a long time ago, but somebody once upon a time asked me, haven't you done all the research there is to do on corn products? Like, oh, no, we're just scratching the surface. I mean, it's science is a series of steps that are incremental progress and asking questions that, you know, maybe nobody's asked before, but also maybe we need to ask questions that we have asked in the past but have forgotten about. So we've, as humans, we've used corn for more than 100 years in this country and in many countries for lots of things. And it's easy to grow corn in some parts of the world and not other parts of the world. But, you know, the idea of science plays such a role in agriculture. Something that strikes me over the years is that whether you're talking about animal production or crop production or processing operations, depending on what industry you're in, some industries work really closely with the scientific community to help understand and improve the efficiency of their production, whatever that production is. And the industries that do that, it's really exciting because science helps the innovation move forward, but also helps efficiencies and helps move this whole idea of agriculture forward. Other industries, maybe not so much, but I am really hopeful because what I have seen in terms of our food and agriculture systems, you know, the companies are really aligned with researchers in trying to ask questions of how do we make it better? How do we make things better? And I'm really hopeful for this. And not just for the production side. You know, as a scientist, I get excited by new, interesting work, but I'm also excited by this idea of how do we make food production more sustainable across the board for everyone. And so I'm very hopeful.
No, that, you know, the data part research really hits home. And as we talked previously, you know, within our group, we do a lot of research, and I'm always humbled by the things I thought I knew or that I recommended as a dairy veterinarian, dairy nutritionist, that often were no-brainer things. You know, poll 100 dairy vets, 100 dairy veterinarians, and everybody's going to say, yes, you need to do that. You need to use that supplement, or if it's use that vaccine, what have you. And then you dig into that, or you ask that question again, or you look at it in a different way, and actually no. It's maybe neutral or in some cases detrimental, right? And I think that's what's, it's that research process, but then also thinking outside the box and just saying, oh, we can't do that. We are in this climate or in this country and we can't do that. Obviously, in some cases, there's regulatory constraints on use of GMOs and certain hybrids, et cetera. But why can't you? You know, have you tried it? Why can't you?
And, you know, something else to build on that even more, you know, a lot of the searches that we do with Google or Google Scholar or any of the other scientific indices, you know, generally a lot of those stop at 1970 and they don't go prior to 1970. There's a lot of work that's been done the last couple of hundred years, you know, post-scientific revolution that is still relevant to today. And I know a lot of people say, well, if it happens before 1970, 1960, 1950, it's not relevant. Well, some of it is, especially when we're talking about the processing side. So a few years ago, I was kind of digging into the literature to try to find, you know, we've been making alcohol, for example, you know, for thousands of years. When was industrial alcohol really commercialized? And, you know, so I was digging through a lot of the chemical engineering and chemistry journals. And, you know, even in the 1940s, scientists were talking about using DDG, distillers dark grains at the time, because it was the whiskey industry, instead of distillers dried grains that we call it now, feeding it to cows and pigs. And there was work that was done in the early 1900s, and there was even the original AFCO definitions for a lot of our corn processing byproducts and co-products from the early 1900s. So there's been a long history of research work that I think if we just jump into Google and say, tell me about blah, 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 we're going to miss.
We miss, and, yes.
Yeah. And to your point, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that like, hey, this is novel. Well, no, it's not necessarily.
And then we get to the whole other discussion of publication bias and so forth, and what data is really available. So then that brings us, you know, to again, a whole area of unknown, perhaps in some cases.
Exactly. You know, I would say our ancestors were pretty smart. Thinking about, you know, my grandparents, great grandparents, who, you know, crop rotation was one of the most important aspects of production agriculture, you know, in terms of pest reduction, weed reduction, water balance in the fields. And, you know, just thinking about sustainable agriculture right now, you know, it's not just cover crops, it's also crop rotations. And, you know, some of the things we have to keep thinking about, because, you know, especially with biofuels, you know, it's this year, not so much, but in previous years, it has been in the center part of the U.S. profitable or more profitable to grow corn and then corn and then corn. So the dynamics change, though. So, you know, what is profitable one year may not be the next year. And I'm hoping this coming year is going to be more profitable for farmers. But, you know, they've got to make choices in terms of what they're going to do on their land. And it's potentially expensive to change your production practices.
That's a really good point, because, you know, what the drivers for all of that are obviously the markets and when are they aligned or not aligned with sustainability, perhaps, right? Where, you know, a decision is made to maybe engage in a practice, or for a year engage in some production that's maybe not the most sustainable, but what's going to drive the profitability or sustainability of that operation, correct?
Absolutely. And then you throw in the market dynamics for fertilizer, for seed, for pesticides. You know, it's, you know, what is the trade with the rest of the world going to be like for corn or soybeans or wheat, or, you know, because that's ultimately going to potentially impact the processors and the byproducts that we're going to have available in our animal industry to use. So, you know, I think what oftentimes gets lost in the sustainability conversation that I've noticed, and this I think is true across many industries, it's easy to talk about climate change and carbon reduction, and, you know, what they really mean is greenhouse gas reduction, CO2, methane, nitrous oxide, the big three. It's easy to talk about that stuff, but I think more important to agriculture is the idea of efficiency. If you can have a more efficient conversion of feed to milk, or feed to meat, or feed to eggs, the feed efficiency is, I think, one of the holy grails, if you will, in terms of sustainability. The feed efficiency, which is impacted by your operation, but also the ingredients that are available, and, you know, but also, you know, the housing that you use in terms of the energy, the lighting or lack of lighting, you know, the operation itself, not just the feed, but all of that impacts this idea of sustainability, because it's all about efficiency. Efficiency of converting the protein and the energy into an animal product. The efficiency of converting energy into heat or light in your facility. And I think what I've seen is a lot of producers, especially in facilities that have been around for a couple of decades, you know, replacing lighting systems, replacing heating systems, insulation, infrastructure, there's going to be that capital cost, but long term, it's going to improve the operational efficiency. And so I think we're still expanding into this multidimensional question about what is sustainability for food production.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Want a herd management software designed for you? BovaSync is helping herds by managing data faster and easier. Contact BovaSync today to learn more. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. accurately measure individual cow feed efficiency with the newest advancement from AffiMilk. Visit AffiMilk.com to learn more. That's AffiMilk.com. Evonik Animal Nutrition, sciencing the global food challenges. Cow Manager, ahead of the herd together. Safe, simple, stop lack. Contact AHV for comfortable dry cow care. Reduce dyscalcemia and simplify transition cow care with Cowbell Pro from Chemlock Nutrition. The next giant leap in dairy profitability is here. Introducing AffiColler Feed Efficiency Service from AffiMilk, the first sensor to accurately measure individual cow dry matter intake. Combined individual feed consumption with milk production data to get profitability insights never before available. Hear from producers who are using it to make a big impact on profitability and sustainability at AffiMilk.com.
Kurt, I mean, it's great to hear you say that because honestly, you know, in our group, working with some companies that are really trying to promote their products, you know, processors that are sustainable have reached towards additives that reduce methane production, and some of those are being promoted or even used on farms that have lots of opportunity to increase the efficiency. And we have you know preached that, if you will, that okay, yes, this supplement can reduce methane production, but wow, the impact that we could have if we could just improve feed efficiency by better use of the data, feeding software, more precision feeding, more precision delivery of that, not wasting ingredients, that's going to have a far greater incremental effect on the overall carbon footprint than adding some additive to the mix. And so thank you, because yeah, if we could make more milk from the same number of cows or the same units of feed, that blows everything else out of the water, right? And I think that's you know that again, great to hear you say that, because that's the key to sustainability.
And I am lucky enough that every once in a while I have just an amazing student and or two. I currently have a student who I'm working with who, I apologize, she doesn't have a dairy herd. She has a beef herd. But we've been working on some precision livestock feeding applications and software at her farm. And it's really interesting if you look at the data before and after in terms of how you can improve that feed efficiency, it is incredible. And reducing waste, and you know, even if you don't change the ingredients that you feed, just knowing when the cows eat, what they need to eat, and giving it to them at the right time and the right amount, it can make a huge difference in terms of this big question about sustainability.
No, absolutely. And then you bring in environment, you know, if we get, and again, in my world, the dairy industry, the dairy podcast show, but you know, can we cool cows more efficiently, et cetera. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned on a few podcasts, I was in the Middle East back in December, and to see, granted there's resources there of water and cooling the cows, but the efficiency of production in keeping those cows in a modern environment, environment that's conducive to high milk production. And again, never saying we're pushing the animal, right? Or we're even pushing a crop we're releasing the stressors that allow that production system to have its maximum potential, correct? And I think you know you could say that in crop growing also. You're not pushing it out of its limits. You're releasing the strains that allow it to reveal its potential.
Absolutely, and I think the bigger message when we think about dairy production, or we think about swine production or egg production, you know, that it's great that we improve our efficiencies. And I'm going to kind of separate myself from this idea of sustainability. And the past couple of years have been focusing on this idea of efficiencies, because ultimately, what does that mean for a producer? If you're more efficient by 1% or 5% or 10%, what that means ultimately is there's going to be more money in your pocket. And I think ultimately, as food producers, that's what we need to think about. And, you know, making an environment that is going to allow that animal to flourish and produce to its maximum potential. Yeah, it's going to take some work, but we've got the tools in front of us to do that right now. And I think this is a really exciting time to be involved in agriculture for sure.
So, Kurt, great opportunity to catch up with you today. And I'd like to be a student in one of your classes and as you work through all of these integrated systems, really. And I think that's what's super cool is, you know, from farm to fork, literally, but not also all the other aspects of the market conditions, and then the byproducts and other industries that are using these grain products. So really an integrated approach to approaching this. I see other, you said you had a few other podcast invites. I can see why, because these can go in many different directions, right?
Well, like I said to you earlier today, what would you like to talk about? we can take a couple hours and talk about anything.
Excellent. So, again, Kurt, as we, here in February, you're probably really looking forward to, you said there isn't much snow on the ground, but really looking forward to quite soon there being time to get out in the field and start some new crop research, new grains research. But this is the time of year, right, to get all those ideas flowing. But really appreciate the opportunity to meet you and to discuss sustainable agricultural production with you.
It was a pleasure for me also. I appreciate the chance to chat with you today, Mark.
So with that, Mark Thomas with the Dairy Podcast Show, signing off. Have a wonderful day.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.